Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren, and today on the show, we have Angela Miller, co-owner of Consider Barwell Farm, located in Paulette, Vermont. The creamery is best known for its Jersey cow's milk cheeses, such as Paulette and Rupert, or Rupert, I'll have to double check. But Angela,
no,
welcome to
Rupert.
The show. How's things? It's Rupert.
Thank
okay,
you very
good.
Much. Like, yeah,
I'm
it's,
thrilled
it's
to have
a
you
pleasure
on the
to
show.
Be here.
Awesome. Thank you. And one more clarification. Is it in Paulette or West Paulette?
Well, there's one village or town called Paulette, and West Paulette is a village within that town. So you were right.
Okay.
And I'm just refining for you.
Thank you, because I read it both ways and I don't want to give the wrong details. So thank you for that.
And we name the cheeses after towns. So Paulette and Rupert.
Oh, sure. Yep. I like that you guys are a local cheese producer, especially for the Northeast groups, which is what I actually want to start with, which is since you guys have been one of the primary cheese producers in the Northeast for the last two decades, excuse me, how does it feel to have accomplished this longevity within the cheese industry?
I'm quite honestly, I'm very proud of everything that we've done over the last two decades, except for the point when I'm very proud of the fact that we did a voluntary recall of
and you know what
that cheese is.
Yeah, that's a hiccup we're going to get to later on in
yeah,
the show.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
just to kind of catch everyone up to speed. So I want to start with when does your journey with Consider Bardwell start? Because from what I understand through the website, it is a very old. It was once the first Vermont cooperative, and then it changed hands a few times, and then it got to you. And I'm just curious, so how does that journey go?
Well, my journey with Consider Bardwell Farm started in the year 2000, and it was not functioning then as a cheese producer. It was founded by a gentleman named Consider Bardwell, in 1863, during the Civil War, when the farmers were all at war and the farm wives were left with everything, child rearing, animal rearing, you name it. So it was the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, and Mr. Bardwell decided that it was an opportune time to have a cooperative for the farms to bring him the milk in the morning. And he would have cheese made here. There's a railroad that runs through the property, or did, and they would ship cheese to Boston and New York every 2 weeks.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And in those big cheddar boxes, which we still have artifacts of. And during the Great Depression of 1929... the cooperative went bust and closed down, and they were always in the family, the various descendants of Consider Bardwell
were
in the family, and they were the ones who sold the farm to us eventually. But
and
after
how did you happen? Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so how did you find this this cheese place available. I mean, so I understand from your background that you were a book editor and a literary agent. This is a big leap to go into owning a creamery.
I was a book editor and a literary agent, and I'm still a literary agent. But my favorite food on earth since I can remember at an early age was cheese. And I wanted to open a cheese shop in Manhattan after college, but I didn't have any money, which is not an atypical thing for a post-college student.
Right, of course.
Grad, I should say. And so I did the next best love thing, which was reading, and got into books. And I was specializing in food-related topics, and I worked with a few cheese authorities on their books. And then we decided to buy a property in Vermont, my husband and I, and we stumbled upon this rather large 300-acre farm and found out its history and thought, hey, we love cheese. Why don't we do that?
Oh, my God. It was a bit serendipitous.
Oh, my
goodness.
We did not know what we were getting into, but it's proven to be the right thing to have done.
What is one of your earliest memories of learning the lifestyle of cheesemaking?
Well, once we purchased the farm property and did a little bit of historical research, we hired, well, my first hire was a French girl who was interested in eventually owning land in Vermont, and she had been making cheese in Provence for 5 years. And I thought, well, Marie Louise can teach us. And she had been making cheese from goat's milk that were French Alpine and Swiss Alpine goats. And she started us, helped us purchase some goats, and she ended up not liking Vermont. So we hired Peter Dixon, who was senior fellow in Vermont cheesemaking, and he came as a 3-day-a-week consultant and helped us build our product line. And my husband and I did our due diligence and our research and our, you know, went to lots of courses at UVM. And I decided that, quite frankly, I didn't want to make, you know, just a run-of-the-mill cheese. I had been working with top chefs from all over the world, and I wanted to please their palates.
And that's a very high bar you probably meet. Yeah.
And they were supportive, and the first delivery of cheese that we made was to the New York restaurant Per Se, and they put it on their tasting menu that week. And they wouldn't have done that if they thought it was not up to par.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's fantastic.
So, it was just a really great start, and Murray's was incredibly supportive right from the get-go, and I was the cheese girl. I would deliver cheese to New York places every Monday when I went back to the city.
Oh, wow. So that was part of your commute back and forth. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So it was a saga, and eventually we teamed up with a fabulous distributor in Vermont who takes the cheese everywhere for us now and sells it. Provisions International, it's quite well known, and they are very supportive of Vermont products.
Yeah, they're a great group. I'm glad you guys work well with them.
We love them.
I want to, props to the Provisions International Group. I wanted to ask you, why is it important for you to have raw cow's milk cheese produced in the U.S.? Do you feel like you're making a statement with that?
Yes. I never wavered for a second about making raw milk cheese once I really learned the details of what is lost in pasteurization. Vermont regulators are pretty supportive of it. A lot of national regulators who shall go unnamed are, they worry terribly about raw milk cheese. But,
I understand. And I wanted to ask you, I think you made cheeses before with goat's milk.
Yes, but I didn't see we will be again. I was milking close to 150 goats until October 2019. And then we were going to reopen again in March of 2020, and the pandemic hit, and I lost my farm help to needing to be stay-at-home parents, homeschooling their kids, and I furloughed my goats to another farm, and I have a trickle of them back now, and I want to start making goat milk cheeses again in the next summer.
Oh, wow.
We shall see. I mean, our goat cheeses were fantastic, in my opinion, and I do want to restart those particular cheeses, the Manchester, the Slyborough, and the Danby.
Oh, yeah. How could recipes. I forget Manchester and Slyborough? Those are the names that I know they did excellent goat cheese. Yes, that's it. Thank you. Yes.
We don't have them for sale now. Fortunately, in August and September of 2019, we did a collaboration with Grafton Village Cheese Company, and we took our milk down to them, and they produced a cheddar that was goat and cow blend. And then the pandemic hit. We were going to take half the makes, and they would take half the makes, and we would keep the collaboration going, but the pandemic kind of shut that down.
And, oh, man.
Hopefully we'll get back to it. So we have a very limited supply of a wonderful cheddar called Wookie Wells Cheddar, and those are the names of three cities in England that have cheddar caves.
Oh, wow. And this is a cow and goat blend?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
And hopefully we'll get back to that sometime, because it is just fantastic.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying that. So how many cheeses do you currently produce right now? I saw four on the site, but is there more than that? Did I miss anything?
We have the inventory limited supply of Wookie Wells cheddar, and we have a decent inventory of Rupert, and we're making more Rupert every week.
Okay.
And we have a very strong supply of Paulet, which was our most popular cheese. About 40% of our sales were of Paulet. And we make Dorset, but not in the 2.5 pound wheel that we used to make it in. We make it in a 3/4 pound square, and it's called Dorset Mini. And to be making more and more of that.
Oh, cool. And that's more like the Taleggio Pont Levesque style.
It's a washed rind. Yeah. Softer cool. cheese.
Is the Paulette also a washed rind?
It's a washed rind, but it's semi hard. It's not a okay. it's not a natural rind. It's got a low water activity level, so it qualifies as shelf stable of all things. But it's a little more moist than, you know, a dry hard cheese. It was originally Peter Dixon and I talked about having it be modeled on a Taleggio of all things, but it's actually turned out to be more of a Piedmontese Italian mountain cheese Toma, quite typical in the Piedmont region.
Oh wow. I can't wait to retry these cheeses. It's yeah. Thanks. So actually let's take a quick break. Listeners, you're listening to Cutting the Curd with Angela Miller of Consider Barwell, and we'll be right back.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin, in the USA. Conte is a raw milk cooked pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineurs on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren. And just to reintroduce, we have Angela Miller here today, of Consider Bardwell Farm. And actually, I wanted to bring up, we mentioned earlier in the episode, a little hiccup that happened in the awesome tenure of Consider Bardwell. And I'm kind of curious to get a little more background on it. Angela will talk about this and tell us all the details, but there was a voluntary recall on the cheeses that took place like 2 years ago, I think now. How did that happen? What are some of the details that, you know, because there was a lot of talk about what happened, but, you know, what did go on there?
Well, we were having a year of expansion in our production. And we were also, and as a result, we were facing a cash crunch that could have been fatal. So we were trying to produce the requisite amount of cheese to break even that year. And everyone was working as hard as they could and harder. And we brought in goat milk from an outside producer to augment our own goat milk. And because the milk was from the outside, we made only one cheese with it, which was Slybro. And we tested every single batch before it went out. And then in September, we tested a batch. We tested actually five batches that were ready to go out. And one of the batches had tested positive for Listeria. Not just species, but the deadly Listeria. We recalled, we stopped production. We did a huge amount of environmental testing, and we recalled all the Slybro. And because it was had been in the same cave with Dorset, we did a general recall of Dorset, everything that had been in that cave of washed rind cheeses, not Paulet, but Dorset and Slybro. We asked people to send back everything that had been made for the previous 5 months. And during the nearly 2 month period where we were not in production and we were not shipping because we had a cash crisis, it became a cash negative.
Right.
And I couldn't pay bills. And so I decided to take a deep breath and shut down for a couple of months until we could get our resources reorganized.
And how
we were cleared by FDA.
Well, first off, were you shocked by when you first found the Listeria? I'm sure you knew this producer. I mean, what was your reaction?
First reaction to this?
Well, it was a mixture of sadness and horror that somebody could get hurt from something that we had shipped out. That was the primary concern, honestly. We obviously stopped taking their milk. Well, they brought the milk in the next day after we found out about the positive, and we tested the milk, and it was positive.
Oh, wow.
So we found what we assume was the root cause, and so it would have been far worse having someone be hurt or worse than falling on our sword and shutting down for a period. And I wasn't really certain that we could ever recover from it, but we did decide that we could go forward.
So I want to ask you how did this work with employees that are from the community around there? How did it go when you had to explain this to them that you needed to take a break? That must have been a very difficult conversation.
It was very difficult and extremely sad, because, you know, luckily they all were able to get unemployment, and they all found great jobs before the pandemic came along.
Right.
It would have been far worse, I think, if it had happened during the pandemic. There wouldn't necessarily have been jobs open to them.
That's a very good point. And now we went from such a low emotional point, I feel like, for you. How did you find the courage to come back and rebuild and relaunch? Because you had that really hard point. And I mean, how do you feel about being the comeback kid as we intend this pun here?
Well, I hope that I can make it. I mean, we came back last July in a very modest way. We didn't really start selling into retail until September. And that even, you know, we were worried about the pandemic, what was going to happen with it. And so many cheesemakers were hurt by the pandemic. But I had really felt PTSD up to a point, and maybe still do feel a little bit of that, but I'm determined. I am so proud of what Consider Bardwell achieved, and I just don't want to let it slip by uncelebrated.
Yeah. I like it. It's coming around.
Yeah.
No, I mean it has a legacy. And all the familiar names of for cheesemongers out there that have worked in the last 5 to 10 years, they know Consider Bardwell.
Well, and they've been so supportive.
That's what I was wondering. So now that you're back, has everyone been supportive? How has the relationships been with specialty stores and cheesemongers out there?
Really, on the face of it, enormously supportive. I mean, we're all in this business for one reason, and that's because we love cheese. And so people have been really, really supportive. We're trying to get our inventories in line so that we can come back as strong in the Northeast as we were. And then eventually, if we're really careful with our pennies and our plans, then we can start to think bigger.
Very cool.
Very cool.
I actually was wondering about the farmers markets. I remember your team always having a booth at the farmers markets. Is this also going to exist? Is it already existing for Consider Bardwell? Or are you guys playing into the farmers market still?
We're heavily into our local farmers markets and a big market on the east end of Long Island, and we're trying very hard to get back into the green market on a smaller scale. We were at 15 markets, so
right,
we're not there yet, but we would love to go back to a couple of the markets that we were in where, you know, we were so appreciated.
Yeah, I remember meeting a lot of my friends over at the Consider Bardwell table. So I hope that happens. I also wanted to go to the other side of the food market world now and ask you, because the specialty food markets carrying specialty foods now, they're changing very fast, and e-commerce is increasing. Is this affecting the format of your cheeses? Because normally I understand it's by weight, but are you going to start doing anything in a pre-pack level, or what have you thought about this?
We have started an e-commerce site on our website, and it's growing. And we are doing cut wrap for a lot of the stores who are requesting it. Cut wrap and cryo.
Okay.
We do it where they want us to do it.
Right, right. You have to adapt. Yeah.
Yeah. And we've, as suggested earlier, we've reformatted Dorset into a smaller, you know, one unit purchase.
Right. Oh, that's
for
exciting.
That very reason.
Yeah. I'm gonna look for that as well. So now that we're talking about the cheeses again, what is do you have a specific pairing that comes to mind that works really well for one of your cheeses?
Yes, we are extremely fond of a local cider maker called Slybro.
Right, of course.
And we had developed one of our cheeses with their Slybro cider. They are in New York State, but within 10 miles of us. And
that's cool.
Yes, they have a sparkling cider called Hidden Star. And we have done pairings. In fact, I'm going to do one this Thursday night over there with our Dorset minis. The wash rind.
Cool.
It's just perfect. In fact, a few years ago, I was at I was out in Portland, Oregon, and there was a cider maker with a bar using our Dorset.
Oh, no way. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I really think the American cider movement is really, it's increasing. I love that.
It
and
is.
The fact, you know, with the cheeses that we have, American and French or European, it's wonderful to kind of mix it all together right now. And not just have, there was like the basic version of cider. Now there's really these heritage apples that are forming ciders. It's very cool.
Exactly.
Yeah. But
we're also doing pairings with a chocolate maker who makes a chocolate charcuterie. They're called
really?
Tavernier, and they're in Brattleboro, Vermont. And I mean, chocolate and cheese, who would have thunk?
Right, but. Right. No, I like that we're adding twists. I hope we're coming up with twists all the time to the to the pairing world. So I have one last question for you, Angela, which was do you have any advice for other creamery owners or cheesemakers out there on starting their own creameries or what they should do to keep their mind sane when they want to start a creamery?
Start a creamery and sell cheese. Get some really good professional advice. And you don't always do it for money, but you do it for love.
I like that. Cool. Well, I just wanted to say thank you for being on the show today, Angela. It was an absolute pleasure. We're so happy you could make it onto Cutting the Curd today. Absolutely. All right. Well, I'm just going to give a shout out to the listeners now. Hey, everyone. Please follow Consider Bardwell on Instagram at Consider Bardwell Farm. You can follow us at Cutting the Curd. And please listen and subscribe to Cutting the Curd via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks for listening and eat more cheese.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.